This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com. La ilaha illallah.
Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'd like to welcome you, dear viewers, to another in our series, The Best of Tawheed. And in this series, we're looking at the best evidence found in the Quran and the Sunnah, and the explanations of the companions of Prophet Muhammad, may God's peace and blessings be upon him, as well as that of early scholars, which give us a clear picture of what in fact is Tawheed in Islam. Now, many anthropologists and sociologists, social scientists, in looking at religion under the influence of Darwinian theory of how humans evolved, they had developed, and many people still look at religion from their perspective, an evolutionary model. According to them, human beings, early human beings, the first ones that evolved from a common ancestor with the apes, the first human beings, human families and tribes that evolved, they used to deify the forces of nature. According to them, when early man came in contact with the cataclysmic and devastating forces of nature, like lightning, thunder, volcanoes, and earthquakes, they saw them as superior beings, supreme beings, powerful. This was the signs of their power. And they sought to appease them the way that they appeased their leaders. The one who was the head of the tribe had to be appeased. People brought things to him, keep him happy, so that he would look down on them well. So they looked at these forces of nature in the same way that they needed to be appeased. So they made sacrifices, they brought food and different things to these forces of nature. And this is how early religion began, according to them. They gave the example of the North American Indians, who believe in the spirits of the rivers and the forests, etc., as an example of this early stage in the evolution of religion, which is known as animism. Animism involves giving divinity or spiritual life to elements of nature, trees, stones, rocks, rivers, seas, etc. So after that stage, then according to them, people started to develop personal gods which were for regions, clans, etc. And this stage, the stage of the family gods, special gods for each family, etc., they give the example of the polytheistic Hindus of India, where every family may have its own personal god. And as economic necessity and war produced nations, families were absorbed into nations, then the tribal gods of the leading families became the main gods of the nations. And the numbers of gods became fewer and fewer as time passed. More areas were conquered. You know, the leading god of the leading family became the god of the area or the region, the country, etc. But prior to becoming one, it reached the point of two gods. And of course, the example they give is that of the Zoroastrians of Persia, who have a god of good and a god of evil. Said, okay, so things evolve down till you reach two gods. And then, after that, you now had the one god pop up. Okay, and actually, in the pharaohs who have multiple gods, their stage was similar to that of the Hindus. They had a number of gods for different families. Even some of the rulers were considered to be gods. In the 14th century BC, one of the Egyptian rulers, Akhenaten, also known as Amenhotep IV, he introduced the idea of one god. The sun was the symbol, Ra. The disk of the sun became the symbol of that one god. So that was the evolutionary development to one god. However, what we see is that, of course, after Akhenaten's death, then multiple gods were brought back in. And if we look at the various religions around the world, even though they may have a number of gods, they generally have, almost every last one of them generally has, belief in one god. One supreme god over all the others. The other gods became like intermediaries, you know, demigods. Some of them were half human, half god, etc. And that is more in keeping with the idea that people were monotheistic and their beliefs became corrupted until they became polytheistic. And the examples we gave, even of the Zoroastrians, who have a god of good and a god of evil, even in their system with the two gods, the god of good is the superior god. He is the one who will win out in the struggle between the two. So he is the ultimate god. And that's what they hold. But they just have another god that struggles with him until the end of this world. So actually, when looking at what has happened to Christianity, when looking at what has happened also to Islam, we have to say that the degenerative model, that people degenerated from Tawheed, from the Unitarian belief, into polytheism, that is in fact more keeping with what we know of the history of the various religions in the various societies. The claim that early man deified nature, this is just a fairy tale. Nobody was around then, nothing has been written of that time. We don't have evidence for it. It's just a blank claim. Whereas the evidence is for monotheism, we do have it. Corruption of monotheism after the time of the prophets is recorded. So we have a much clearer picture when we follow the degeneration model than we do when we try to follow the evolutionary model. Because, of course, the evolutionary model is based on the theory of evolution, which itself is questionable. It posits concepts which are not really founded in clear evidence. It's only supposition that human beings evolved from ape-like creatures sharing a common ancestor with the apes. This belief is the belief used to justify atheism, that we have no God, in fact. Because if we and the monkeys, the apes, share the same common origin, and you don't see any monkeys worshiping God, creating temples and idols that they worship, so then the question is, why do we? And of course, this kind of argument or this kind of view is very common among the social anthropologists, you know, social scientists, who tend to look at human beings and judge their actions based on what animals do. So they say, since animals don't do that, it means it's something that we have learned, probably not good for us, better not to do it. So they promote time and time again the idea that we should be like animals. And so you had a big, strong movement there, which is known as the nudist movement, where people promoted nudity, that we shouldn't be clothed. You know, you don't see any monkeys, chimpanzees wearing clothes, except for those that we've put clothes on. They said, we should be natural. You know, this idea that you have to cover yourself is like, you know, some kind of a psychological thing which the society is putting on you. You should be free, open. So they had nudist colonies, nudist parks in Europe, where mom, dad, the kids all went stark naked to the park. Even the person who's selling ice cream there, he's naked. The whole park in nudity. They felt this is going back to nature, going back to the norm for human existence. But of course, this remained with a small segment of society, though we had nudist beaches and things like that came along. Still, the majority of people didn't really accept this way of thinking. We're going to pause here for a break before looking at the origin of shirk. Where did shirk come from? If the beginning of our faith as human beings was in Tawheed, so how did shirk enter our ranks in the first place? We'll be looking at that in our coming segment. We'll see you after the break.
Islamic Online University, changing the nation through education. Register now and get started. Visit www.iou.edu.gm for more details.